Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Aftershock Monday episode. And for all you Aftershock fans out there, you're going to just be over the moon with not only do I have one creator, but I have two incredible creators. One of the books from Aftershock that I feel is really a great example. It completely exemplifies what Aftershock is about with quality and really, really great stories. So I have Adam Glass and Patrick Olaf, the co-creators of Rough Riders, on the show.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
I'm curious who came before us, who is on from Aftershock.
So you two, it's the first time I've had writer and artist on at the same time, but we've had, let's see, we've had Mike Martz on. He was actually the first from Aftershock.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, jeez. Exactly. Right?
We always have to follow him, huh?
Unbelievable.
We've had Tim Seeley, we've had Cullen Bunn, we've had Christopher Sabella, we've had Sean Lewis. And I know I'm forgetting some others, but yeah, well, the Aftershock.
That list gets pretty long before you get to us. How'd that happen?
Yeah, exactly.
I know you guys have wanted to come on for a while, but I was kind of feeling like, let's.
You were intimidated. Go ahead and say it. You were intimidated.
Exactly. I was intimidated. Plus, you know, I wanted to kind of have an idea of how the story was going to completely unfold. One issue to go. But yeah, we get to talk about it as a whole, you know, look back with perspective, right?
I think it's the beard. Cool. We intimidate people with our beards, Pat.
There you go. That's why I grow it.
All right. So for some of our listeners who may not be familiar with your previous work or your history with comics, let's start with you, Adam. Did you grow up reading comics? How did you fall into this writing of comics? Or was that always a goal? And maybe some of your previous work that some of our listeners may have seen on the racks before.
Yeah, I grew up in New York City in the Bronx in the 70s, and back when you actually got comic books in a candy store on the rack. Actually had a guy who was a neighbor, a little older than me, named Eddie Pagan, who lived upstairs. And Eddie, wherever you are, thank you, because at 4 years old, you gave me my first comic book, and I started ripping through them and sort of fell in love with them. And, you know, I think like most kids, I started off with Spider-Man, especially Spider-Man being sort of a city kid himself. It felt very familiar to me. And then as I grew older, obviously, and I opened up more and I became Batman, and then it became X-Men. And, you know, I was right there for sort of, you know, Claremont's run on X-Men, and Jim Lee came in, and then Thor. And, you know, as everybody has heard the story a million times, my life exploding moment when Beta Ray Bill takes Thor's hammer, and I was just, you know, and all messed up over that. And then, you know, and then as I grew older, actually, funny enough, comics grew too, you know. So by the time I turn, you know, 18, you sort of have the British invasion, and you sort of have, you know, everything's coming in. You've got Garth Ennis, and you've got, you know, Constantine, and you've got, you know, all these great Neil Gaiman and Sandman, and, you know, just, and I remember reading Miracle Man, and like, as I, so this is perfect timing, and Frank Miller, and, you know, The Dark Knight. And so just really, really, again, sort of like couldn't have grown up at a better time for comic books. So always, always, always loved it. Always wanted to be part of it. And then just sort of, you know, later in life, as I had built a TV career and film career, there became some opportunities to actually start dipping into comic books. And much to my wife's dismay, because everybody knows you make no money in comic books, I completely do it for the passion. So every time she's like, "Are you writing another comic book?" I'm like, "Yes." We should paid more. My God. But yeah, so I've written Luke Cage Noir. I wrote Deadpool, Suicide Kings, and Deadpool Pulp. I wrote, I wrote Luke Cage. I wrote Justice League, a couple of books. But really the thing I think that sort of put me on the map was when I did New 52 Suicide Squad. And luckily, I wish I could tell you it was, you know, I was a genius, which I am not. Just got really lucky that I loved Harley Quinn.
What?
Squad. I know, Pat. Just relax. Okay. I know I tell you I'm a genius, and that really sort of changed everything. And so I did that, and then from that was able to do a lot of IP. And now I am currently back with DC, about to launch the new Teen Titans. So excited to do that and bring Damian Wayne and his new generation of superheroes to readers everywhere.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm looking forward to that as well. So how about you, Pat? Were you one of those creators that said, I want to be rich. Let me make comics.
Well, yeah, it's funny because Adam and I think we have similar touchstones in terms of what affected us and what influenced us growing up. And the funny thing is that, you know, his wife says, so are you writing another comic book? My wife says, are you drawing another comic book? And they both have the same defeated tone in their voice kind of thing. Unfortunately, this is all I do. So it's not an unfamiliar story where I was, when I was a kid, my dad, bought me a Superman comic and, I was immediately attracted to it. I loved it. And, so comics became something I was interested in. And then the real turning point was we were at a friend of my dad's. He had a comic book collection, and he had a copy of Neil Adams' Avengers. I think it was 93, the one with, you know, Ant-Man goes inside of the Vision to, you know, fix whatever's going on in there. When I opened that thing up, my brain exploded. I couldn't imagine somebody actually drawing this. It was just so life-changing in a lot of ways. I think that those Neil Adams Avengers, and then later on the Neil Adams Batman with the Ra's al Ghul storyline and that kind of stuff, those things really just set their hooks in pretty deeply into as far as what I was going to end up doing for the rest of my life. So, I mean, I was also a big fan of John Buscema. Jack Kirby's Fantastic Four. To me, Captain America should only be drawn by Sal Buscema. That's who Captain America is to me. So really, that was what launched my comic book collecting frenzy. I would draw on all my homework at school and the back of my test papers. I would, you know, create my own little comics and stuff. I think early on, I kind of knew that that's what I loved, but I didn't know that I could do that for a living or that anybody did that for a living. I didn't know how that worked. Then I realized that actually people get paid to do this kind of stuff. Yes, they don't get paid a lot, but you can make money doing this kind of thing. And so they just kind of progressed from there. I mean, the influences just kept coming in terms of like I was John Byrne. Eventually found Bill Sienkiewicz and Frank Miller. Dave Mazzucchelli, those kind of guys, when I was a little bit older, really then changed what I thought comics could do visually. And then at that point, that's when I made the decision. I really wanted to try to do this for a living. So, I was fortunate enough to, I met Ron Frenz, who worked at an animation company here in Pittsburgh. I was doing some work there as well while I was at art school. He showed some of my samples to Ralph Macchio, editor over at Marvel. They had me do a little fill-in and kind of put it on a shelf for a little while. They needed some backup stories in Thor. So they pulled my story off the shelf, ran that, hired me to do the backup stories and Thor for a little while. And then from what I understand, one day Glenn Herdling walks in at Ralph Macchio's office and says, we need a new regular artist on Nomad. Ralph says, how about this guy? And they hired me on Nomad. That was my first regular book at Marvel. And then it just kind of went from there. Untold Tales of Spider-Man, Spider-Girl 52, Catwoman, you know, all the way up through Rough Riders. So that's basically my sordid past.
Your sordid past. I love it. I love it. And you are still based out of Pittsburgh?
I am. Yep.
It's a lot easier these days, right? Was it kind of the beginning of the digital? Things weren't necessarily going through FedEx, or have you been around long enough?
Well, when I first broke in, yeah, the idea of digital and, uploading files, that was not in the picture. You drew on the boards and, always kept in mind what were the closing times of the nearest Federal Express facilities to you. And then based on your deadline, then you would work as up to that point as quickly as you could, throw them in the box and then race like a crazy person to the nearest Federal Express location to get it out, pages out that night. So, things are much easier these days, but when I first started, no, there was none of that. It was all just,
get on your horse and you'd ride.
Exactly. So, you know, just racing up to the Federal Express window, you know, right before they closed, banging on the door, pleading for mercy, that kind of stuff.
So, yeah, they so they probably knew you by name over there.
Yeah, the crazy guy. I think that's who they knew me as.
All right. Well, let's get into specifically the title that you both mentioned, the one you're doing for Aftershock. It's been absolutely amazing. Three volumes so far, and that's Rough Riders. Adam, why don't you give some of our listeners who may not be familiar a quick synopsis of the story and the concept of Rough Riders?
Rough Riders is basically the idea is, you know, to take real historical characters that I've always admired and have loved, love history and especially love the characters in this book, and say, what if they all teamed together and basically started their own sort of super team back in a time before, at least in comic book history, you know, or that, you know, team existed. So this idea of like, you know, taking these greats and putting them together and seeing how they would interact with each other. And also something that both Pat and I strive to do is make it as historically accurate as possible. So outside of like, you know, them becoming a team and fighting aliens in Cuba, is true. So it has Harry Houdini, you know, it has Jack Johnson, who was the first African-American world heavyweight champion of the world. It has Annie Oakley. It has, you know, who was probably the one who surprised us the most as we learned more about her, what a really sort of forward-thinking woman she was in a time where women didn't have a lot of rights. You know, she really sort of packed a lot of heat. And then we have Thomas Edison, who was the Steve Jobs of his time and a real SOB. History talks about him as sort of this nice old man, but the truth is he was not a very kind soul. So, and then, of course, being led by Teddy Roosevelt and Monk Eastman, who was really the first famous gangster in America, turn of the century. And like, really, if you sort of trace back the mob and all that stuff, he was like one of the first people. So it's the first few books have them. And then in the third book, we introduce a new Rough Rider in H.P. Lovecraft. So being able to play with these historical characters that, you know, to me are already heroes and jump off the page and be able to put them into these kind of stories is just pretty amazing.
And where did you come up with the idea? What's kind of the origin of the germ, if you will, that this book grew out of?
Well, I was totally drunk. No, I'm joking. The truth comes out. Actually, I was working on Supernatural at the time, and Robbie Thompson, who's also a comic book writer, and Spider-Man and a couple of other books that I know he does. And I just came in one day and I was just like, you know, talking about sort of this idea that I had, and I bounced it off him and he said, yeah, man, you should do that. You know? And then of course it was just sort of finding someone to do it. It was really, once again, just mixing my love of history and my love of comic books and sort of like doing what the kids today call a mashup, you know, and seeing, you know, and it worked out. So, you know, it was like when I sat down, actually, I pitched at Comic-Con to Mike Martz and me and John Kramer at Aftershock. I didn't even get up off the table. They're like, we want to do it. I'm like, let's do it. You know, and I was like, really? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. That's great. So it was great that they sort of saw what I saw on it, you know, and, you know, and then when, it was funny cause I'm not going to say names, but they originally had this artist and he started sending these pictures in. And I said, you know, look, he's a great artist, but I don't think he's really getting this, you know? And Mike Martz said, you know, I think I got somebody who might be more in the style. And I said, have him draw a Teddy Roosevelt. And they sent me a picture of Pat's drawing of Teddy Roosevelt. And I said, that's the guy. Let's do this. And as they say, the rest is history.
So let's talk a little bit about that, Patrick. How did Mike approach you with this concept? What was your, you know, your initial information about the story that Anna wanted to tell?
Well, it's interesting here, Adam's side of it, because I, you know, that jives with what I experienced as well. I had just finished up Barbed Wire for Dark Horse, and I was looking for another project, and I had heard that Mike had gone over to Aftershock and was a part of that company. They were just getting started,
And I'd always liked Mike. Mike had been my editor back at Marvel. Then he was again. We worked together again at DC. Brought me on for an issue of Batwoman, which turned into a little run on Catwoman. So I'd known Mike for years. Loved working with him. I think he's one of the best editors of comics. And so when I heard that he was over there, I sent him an email and said, "Hey, I'm looking for a new project. Do you have anything?" And he said, "We don't right now." He said, "But you know, we're putting things together, so just keep in touch, and something may open up." I said, "Okay, that's fine. I appreciate that." And then about a week later, he sends me another email and says that might have something. Could you draw Teddy Roosevelt? Now that you know, I've been drawing comics for a while. That's the first time anyone's asked me to draw Teddy Roosevelt right. to get a job. I said, sure. So it worked out well because I love history. I told, you know, Mike said that it's a period piece. I said, that's perfect. I said, you know, the funny thing is, as I was working on the Teddy Roosevelt sketch, I was reading a book on the sinking of the Lusitania. So, I mean, I really enjoy that kind of stuff. So I did my Teddy Roosevelt drawing, sent it off, heard back pretty quickly that Mike liked it, Adam liked it, everybody was on board, and if I was interested, we were a go. I said, absolutely. So he sent me over the idea and the pitch idea, and I just loved it immediately. I mean, the idea of putting these characters together to have this adventure, I thought was genius, and it really is something that was right in my wheelhouse, something that was definitely something I'd be interested in. I thought I'd have a lot of fun with. And so that was it. So I said, yep, I'm on board. And then off we went. So that was basically it.
Yeah. I love that. Your story with Mike is kind of similar to my own. You know, I know Mike had left DC because they were relocating to, the West Coast, yep. and he went yep. back to Marvel, and he really wasn't there that long, you know, relatively. And he moved, and I'm like, what? Mike left Marvel again already for Aftershock? And at that point, I had so much respect for Mike that I was like, okay, yep. if Mike left Marvel for this, I have to pay attention because I know it's going to be good. Yep. So yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. In a business where, you know, a lot of people I think we all could agree on this. Like, you know, Mike is one of the good guys in the business and super talented, and we, you know, have all been drawn there. And I think that Aftershock continually putting out such great material is proof of not just Mike, but also Joe Pruitt. There's yep. another guy in the business that anyone who knows comics is a comic book guy. And between the two of them,
oh yeah,
they are really, you know, friends to creators and smart guys, and really make it worth it. So Aftershock really got something going on. It's why we keep going back.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Can you two
talk? I think that was one of the nice things about working with Mike as well, is that on a project like this, you have it's a unique concept. It's a period piece, all that kind of, you could find yourself in a different situation with it, maybe a different editor, somewhat editorially strangulated a little bit, where they're very heavy handed about what they're really looking for. But he really let us kind of go. He let us develop this as a unit. And I think that was really one of the geniuses behind this project, is letting all four of us, me, Adam, Gabe, Sal, all kind of gel together to form a team. And that was one of the great experiences in working at Rough Riders, was that this idea that all four of us had come together. I think we all were doing fantastic work, and we had such great respect for each other. And Mike just let us do our own thing. And I think that's why the end result was as good as it was.
Yeah, we keep joking that Gabe and Sal, we call ourselves the Beatles. And Mike the
yes.
Beatle, because we're that cocky. But we just, there's such a love and respect for everybody. And the yep. emails that go back and forth are like, there's rarely a fix. You know, it's like, hey, can you shade this, or can you do yep. this or that? And everybody so respects each other. There's never an argument yep. of, yep, you're absolutely yep. right. And we yep. just go. So it's been one of those rare things where we're firing on all cylinders, from editor to writer to artist to colorist to letterer. It's like we're really simpatico, and it's been pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, so obviously on a period piece like this, there's a lot of research that goes into it. Is everybody kind of doing research on their own, or are you guys kind of doing that together? Like, hey, I came across this great thing, let me share that with you and check it out. Has that been more of that, or has it been more on your own?
Pat, go ahead. You want to take that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's the nice thing about working with Adam was not only is he write a tell a great story, that he's been kind enough to when he finds and has reference that is applicable to our scene, he includes it in the script. He'll send it over to me, which is great. I mean, it makes my job easier, and then it's up to me to do the rest of it. If it wasn't for Google and the ability to search these things online, I would be in big trouble. But that was one of the things that I really enjoyed about it, was getting a chance to do the research on it, to find out what a streetlight looks from 1903, and to find out what all these what people wear and what the street scenes look like, what they're driving. I mean, that to me was as much fun as drawing the book, creating that environment, trying to be as accurate as possible. So there was a lot of reference, a lot of research involved, but Adam was great by, you know, sending in pictures and things that he thought were applicable to the story, and I really appreciate it. So it made my job easier.
Yeah, and you know, the same thing. I mean, for my thing, it's, you know, I was a history major in college, so a lot of it was knowledge I already had, and then, you know, you'd learn certain things, or I would research certain things. Because I did, again, want the story to as much be real as possible. So almost everything the characters are going through is pretty much where they are in their lives. You know what I'm saying? So that's really sort of rings true to what it is. And the crazy thing, in real life, a lot of these guys did know each other. Edison and Roosevelt knew each other. Andy Oakley and Edison knew each other. Harry had met Teddy once. You know, so there was a lot of crossover in the real life too, in real world, and sort of reading about what people thought of each other. Because you got to remember, back then there was not that many famous people. You know what I'm saying? It's not like today where like it's cult of, you know, celebrity. You know, like it's like, you know, Stone and hit a celebrity. Back then, you know, you could literally count on sort of two hands how many celebrities were in the whole world, and they were. Very famous, you know, so it was interesting. But yeah, I love finding those little facts and those little things and sort of peppering it in there and these stories and everything. And, you know, Pat is just such a master of sort of taking it. And like I probably one of the most exciting things for me was to get his drawings, you know, and see how he brought it to life and the detail he would take. And, you know, young artists should look at Pat, because Pat does something that a lot of people don't do anymore. He takes the time to actually draw the details. You know, you look at every page and it's literally a work of art. And I'm not just saying that because he's on the phone.
The check's in the mail.
Checks in the mail, buddy. But it's true. And by doing it, it elevated, you know, the story. You know, and it took it to a higher level, his visuals. And I really thought, you know, the book wouldn't have been the same with any other artist. He really was the guy who took it to the next level. And I can't, you know, thank him enough. I mean, it's not, you know, yeah, the stories had great pacing and all that stuff. But, you know, if you didn't have, you know, that, you know, and I could inject the personal moments, do all those things. But if you didn't have the craftsman of Pat, you know, this who's a veteran craftsman, deliver that and then some, it wouldn't have been the same book.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I appreciate it.
I would say you could give this book to somebody who's coming up and show things like, and I mentioned this when we reviewed the last issue. I was flipping through and I noticed, you know, it's a hand on a chin, or it's one of the characters, you know, putting a hand on the other character's shoulder, you know, those real life touches that convey emotion and help with you know, kind of the storytelling from panel to panel. So yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Well, I appreciate that. The check's in the mail for you too. But I think that's part of it too, is that that part of what a comic book artist is supposed to do is not just draw a pretty scene, draw an exciting scene. You have to act them all out. You have to act out the scenes. You have to be able to act the characters. And I think that kind of storytelling is so important in a comic book, because you can easily kind of get lost in just some flashy visuals or some big explosions. But what creates an overall good story that it involves and connects with the readers is the acting that you bring to the characters.
Yeah, good point.
And I think you add the sort of death colors of Gabe and and the expert lettering of Sal, and that sort of, you know, it's the gumbo.
Exactly.
All the gumbo that all comes together and makes such a good deal.
So let me ask you this, Adam, you know, speaking of doing the research, did you always know it was going to be in this time period with these characters? I mean, I imagine there are probably some other time periods that, that would have worked. And we kind of saw that in the Rough Riders Nation special, which was a whole lot of fun. But did you always know originally the story was going to be this team?
I did. I love, like, I just love the time, you know, I love sort of the turn of the century and, you know, the 19th to the 20th century. My favorite movie is The Wild Bunch. You know, I love H.G. Wells. I love Sherlock Holmes. I love Harry Houdini and Teddy Roosevelt. So to me, it was a time that I wanted to pay homage to because I find it so interesting. And I think it really is in some ways the most interesting time ever because it really was the old world coming into the new world. And so many amazing people came out of that time. So for me, I always knew it was then. And also look, you know, I also wanted to give a little nod to steampunk, but not overblow it, you know? Yep. So I feel like steampunk stories can then just become about the steampunk and not about, you know, and also you never really saw that in the American stories. It was always the sort of English steampunk story. So I wanted to sort of add a little flavor to it. I think we walked that line, you know, we never went too nuts with it, but we always had fun. Mike Martz's favorite character is, what's the robot's name again? I can't remember. Sebastian.
Sebastian. Right, right.
Yeah. Yep. Like, you'd always be more Sebastian. I'm Sebastian for some reason. But, you know, giving them enough gadgets. Like that front cover, you know, that first cover that Pat did so wonderfully, that is actually completely, from me, ripped off from the idea of it from the original Wild Bunch photo, you know, which is a famous photo. And I sent it to Pat and I said, imagine this, you know, like I actually took a picture somewhere and, you know, but it's all with these, you know, so it feels old school, but yet there's all these like modern steampunk weapons. And the minute he drew it, I mean, even from the sketch, you just knew it was going to be a kick-ass cover.
Yeah.
No, it was so much fun. When Adam sent it over, cause we had talked, we talked about the idea of what would be the first issue cover. Adam sent that over. How about this? And it was, you know, with the steampunk weapons and everything, the hair stood up on the back of my neck. I said, oh my gosh, that is fantastic. And, and I think that's that idea behind it, that combination of, the steampunk technology with those characters in that photo. I think he's right. I think that's exactly why it was, such a powerful cover.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and it's awesome. And again, shout out to the colorist Gabe for doing it like with that sepia tone, but then the weapons are kind of a brighter metallic cover. Yeah, an image that stays with you when you see it.
Yep.
I wonder if you guys have had any feedback from like history teachers or other teachers that have said, hey, this is a really cool concept. You know, we're talking about it in the classroom, way to get young readers interested in history.
I know we both have, and it's actually one of the things we talk about because it's really fantastic, which is, I've had a couple of people come up to me at comic conventions and say, I'm a teacher and you're making history fun and thank you. Or I've given the book to some of my students and have turned it on. But the craziest story would be I was in Portland with my family for Thanksgiving. I'm going to say a year ago. It wasn't this Thanksgiving, it was Thanksgiving before. And I gave my credit card to the cab. It was an Uber driver. And the Uber driver said, I usually don't do this, but if I ask you a strange question, I said, yeah, he goes, you're not Adam Glass of Rough Riders.
Oh my gosh. That's funny.
I said, you know, and of course my daughter, my kids are rolling their eyes like, oh God. Vigo's just going to be out of the wall, you know? And he's like, I'm a history teacher and I love your book. And I gave it to students. So to me, that's one of the best things that could happen and come back to. And Pat, I know that's happened to you too.
Oh yeah, definitely. And there's been, we were traveling, visiting some friends of ours. And there was an older boy, neighbor boy that come over. And he found out, he heard my name and found out what I did. And they had actually used Rough Riders in their history class. So it was really cool. I didn't know that we had just started, had not been out that long, but obviously connected with this history teacher, used it in class. I was very, that was a great story to hear. There was a gentleman that came out to me at a convention at one point, and he was not necessarily, he wasn't a history teacher, but he was, I think he was just there with friends of his. He really wasn't a huge comic book fan, And when he came by the table and saw Rough Riders, he immediately gravitated toward it. And he started asking questions about it. And once I told him about the story, he was so excited. He was actually kind of shaking. He said, I can't believe this comic book is out there. I need to get all of them. I said, yes, you do. And, but he was just so excited. He wasn't necessarily a huge comic book fan, but he was a huge history fan. And the fact that he found a comic book with these characters that had this, this kind of storyline, he was so excited. And that was just so cool to see him react that way and see him have a connection to it. That was super fun.
Yeah, that actually goes to a point that Adam and I were talking about before you joined us, Pat, about there's a comic out there for everybody. It's just a matter of matching up the right story yep. to the right person. So how's the reception been overall?
I mean, look, you know, we got three arcs out of it. So obviously it was good, you know. I'd say the reviews have been 90% really good, you know. Look. But, and you just said it, you know, it's like either it's for you or it's not. You know, there are certain reviews I read. I'm like, well, you never were in from the jump, you know, like right. If you don't buy into the concept, then, you know, and everybody wants to obviously point to, what's it called? What's the Alan Moore book? Legend,
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which is fictional character. You know, it's a little different. It's you know, it's more make believe characters where these are real historical characters. But yeah, sure. Any characters that you go into the past and do, I don't think he has the forever sign on that. And he's the only guy who can do those stories. But I think it's an easy place to go. And if you start from that place, then I guess it's never going to be the kind of story for you. But it's interesting. You know, we just keep getting love for it, you know, and comes from the craziest places sometimes. You know, I constantly get Twitter things or somebody finds it or I read a review and, you know, it comes from all different sides. And now, by the way, and Pat, I just got a book from Italy. Like, it's being printed in Italy. It's being printed in France. And,
nice.
You know, which is interesting because, you know, you think, oh, it's American history. Well, it sort of translate, but apparently it has. And I've actually read a couple of reviews from there too. So, you know, these characters are bigger than life, you know, and it's interesting because I think, again, you know, one of the things we really, really try to do in the books is sort of show them warts and all, you know.
Right.
I love Teddy Roosevelt, but you know, he could be a pompous asshole, you know. and we show that, you know, and Annie Oakley was an alcoholic and you know, and Harry Houdini fought in many of his own fears and Jack Johnson was self-destructive and you know, it was like, so we don't hide anything. We show these people for who they really are.
Yeah, and I think again it goes to trying to be as historically accurate as you can while you're telling a fictional story, but it also makes these larger than life characters, you know, people that I learned about in history class, it makes them a little more relatable. Hey, you know, yeah, Teddy Roosevelt was a great president, you know, and a great diplomat and statesman and everything, but he also was a person.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And the thing about him especially, and, you know, there's definitely hints to it, but – you know, you think Bruce Wayne was a dark guy, you know, right. Teddy Roosevelt had some serious darkness to him and had to deal with it, you know, and we talk about it in the book. He lost his wife and his mother on the same day and bedrooms right across from each other. And instead of manning up and taking care of his newborn baby, he splits and he goes to the Badlands and gets lost for a while. And, you know, and he drinks too much and he becomes a cowboy and he starts to shoot and fight and sort of, you know, in our story, he meets somebody that changes his life. But my point is, like, you know, through the book, he feels he carries this, you know, we're all fathers. Imagine abandoning your child, you know, and in real life, he carried this, you know? And so Alice, his daughter, is a big part of the story, you know, and she constantly is coming back and a constant reminder to him of, for all the success that he has, of one of the biggest failures he's had, which is being a father.
Yeah. I wonder if I could ask you, Pat, what's been your, if you have to pick one, what's been your one favorite thing about working on this project? I can't say the giant page.
Yeah, that's going to be tough to pick just one. I mean, I've been in this business for a long time and I've had the chance to work on a lot of great properties and work with a lot of great people. But this project will remain the top of the heap for me. This has just been a real labor of love. I think not only for me, but for Adam, for Gabe, for Sal. So it's hard to distill it down to just one thing. And I think it's something we talked about before. It is that combination of, and that coming together of story concept, and creative team, editorial team, that doesn't always happen in this business. And there are times when sometimes it clicks, sometimes it doesn't. And this one did in a big way. And I think I could point out, I just love getting Adam's script every issue. I mean, I read those things like a fan reads the comic book. I mean, I just couldn't wait to see what happened next. I loved reading, everything that Adam wrote, and I loved getting a chance to draw all of it, the research, seeing Gabe's colors come in, seeing Sal's letters come in. So it's really almost impossible to distill it to one thing, just because the project itself, as a whole, was one of the best of my career there.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that for you, this project, was it transcended work. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of projects that you've worked on, and it's like, I got to go to work today to draw this. Whereas this was like, I can't wait to draw this.
Exactly. And now, of course, these things have to come out. So there was a part of it where I was like, oh my gosh, how many pages do I have to do before this date? So, there's definitely a big labor of love aspect to this project that really just made the whole thing so enjoyable.
How about for you, Adam? Can you narrow it down to one or two things?
Yeah, well, first of all, this is my fourth favorite thing I've ever done. As I've told Pat a million times, I couldn't agree more that this has been one of those rarefied situations where, like we said, everybody, it was like, if we're a band, we're all jamming together. And the minute we started to play, it all felt just so right. And so it's ruined me moving forward. You say that other artist, it's ruined me. Exactly. I think, look, for me, to see the finished books, to see the art done, to see the writing done, to hear the response from people, that they dug the story we were telling and this crazy little idea that, I came up with when I was on peyote in desert. No, I'm joking.
More answers are revealed.
Yeah. More answers are revealed. No, this idea that I actually pitched to my wife, who looked at me and was like, yeah, sure. Okay. Is it a movie? I'm like, no.
Yeah, right. No, it's a comic book. Oh, that look again.
I joke. She so loves and admires, because my son gets to sort of share in all that. And that's actually, if I was really to come full circle, and Pat, I'm going to blast you here a little bit, because I do think it's important to talk about this, because we all have kids here, is that, Pat had said this to me a couple of times and recently shared something with me, is that as he has been doing this book, his daughter has been coming into the room and seeing him do all these drawings and do all this stuff, and was so inspired by it. Not only did she draw for her class, sort of the Rough Riders, lived with these characters. Yep. And that, it's just awesome. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm so glad that like our kids too, and my son's the same way, could sort of grow up and know about these characters and sort of live this adventure with us. So, that's been super cool.
Yeah, it's been great, because this hasn't been, if it was only one arc or a handful of issues, but the fact that it was three arcs over the course of about 2 years, like Adam said, we lived with it, but our kids lived with it too. I mean, my daughter was like 9 when I started. She's 11 now. And that's, come into the studio every day. We were on vacation in Washington, D.C., and see a portrait of Teddy Roosevelt, and she runs over. Oh my God, it's Teddy Roosevelt. Annie Oakley is her favorite character. So we've all, I think Adam is exactly right. We've lived with it, and our kids have been able to grow up with it too. So, it's been great.
That's awesome. And I did mention earlier the Rough Riders Nation special, and that was so much fun. It kind of gave us a glimpse into other time periods and the Rough Rider teams that would have been, in the 60s and the 70s. Are there any possible plans for any future Rough Rider stories with some of those other teams, or is it yet to be determined?
No, you'd have to ask Mike Martz that question.
Well, actually, Mike's going to be on next week.
Mike Martz, we're not the publishers, but let's put it this way. We are ready and loaded.
Exactly.
They come to try any of that stuff. I will say this, and Pat and I have talked about this before. We do have one more what we call the secret mission that no one talked about story, Rough Rider story left that we'd love to tell one day. So we're hoping in a year or two, we get a call from Aftershock and they say, hey, guys, you want to do one more story, one more arc? And we'll say yes, because it's the cherry on top of the cake.
Exactly.
Nice. Well, I really want to thank you two for taking the time. Before we go, are there any upcoming projects that we should be on the lookout for? I know, Adam, you mentioned your Teen Titans run. You have anything?
Teen Titans coming out in July. And July, yeah, it just comes, excuse me, Teen Titans comes out in June, the special, number one. And then in July comes out the series with Bernard Chang as the artist. So totally, please check it out, man. It's really cool.
Right on. What about you, Patrick? Anything upcoming you can?
Yep, I got. I'll be doing Scooby Apocalypse for DC. I got a chance to do a fill-in. They liked it enough, so they're having me do more. It's another. It was a lot of fun. It's another story with my daughter. I drew an issue. She walked in and she saw a drawing of the Mystery Machine on my board. She goes, "Oh my God, it's the Mystery Machine!" So. So I'll be doing some Scooby Apocalypse for DC. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Awesome. And Patrick, if any of our listeners want to follow along on your social media to see when these projects are coming out, take a look at your artwork, just get in touch with you. What's your Twitter handle or all that stuff? Best place to follow your work.
It is. Let's see. I only have to have it written down. I don't know. It's, you'll have to find me on Instagram, Facebook. I'm blanking on my own Twitter handle because I'm in the,
That's all right. I'll put it in the show notes. So listeners, if you want to follow up.
You can rescue me. Put it in the show. That's it. That's what I was going to say. Put it in the show notes. Put it in the show notes.
How about you, Adam? Where's the best place to keep up to date with your work?
AdamGlass44 at Twitter. You could find me there.
All right. Well, once again, I really want to thank you gentlemen for joining me on Aftershock Monday. It was great to talk about Rough Riders. I love the series, and I think it's going to be one of those that really stands the test of time. So kudos to you for your work.
Well, thank you.
We so appreciate it, man, and best of luck. And thank you for what you do and, supporting comic books and getting comics out there, because without guys like you and local comic book stores, we wouldn't have an audience to invite to.
Wow. Exactly right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. So listeners, remember, if you want to listen to past episodes of the podcast, you can go to lrmonline.com. While you're there, be sure and check out all our other coverage of pop culture, movies, TV shows, all that kind of good stuff. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us there. All three platforms are great spots to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.